Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The Oddcast.
Two guys yelling at each other about radio, music, and nonsense. And now, here's Max Tolkoff and Halloran.
Okay, all right. So, tape.
Roll tape.
Is the tape rolling? The tape is rolling. Is it a cassette, reel-to-reel? Is it a cassette, reel-to-reel, mini-disc tape?
Digital tape.
All right, I'm ready for you.
All right, ready? Here we go. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the broadcast of The Oddcast. I'm Max Tolkoff, along with Mike Halloran, broadcasting from the 75th floor of the Miramar Tower just outside of downtown San Diego. Mike, it's good to have you back this week.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
Come on.
What the fuck
you
is wrong with
you? You could do that voice, seriously. Too. No, we want to get the whole sports announcers.
Wait.
This
is what I want to know. That was an amazing intro. I'm super fucking stoked that you did that.
Why couldn't you just go, hi, Max, thanks for...
Because no, if I do that, no, because I was just taken aback of how radio you sounded right there. And I was just wondering to myself, did you ever do that kind of radio? Did you ever
do the
shucking and jiving, the what do they call it? The puking jock.
And puking. Come on, like it's you like gotta put the bubble in your voice. And I keep smiling because that's what they do at the 40.
Wait, the bubble in your voice?
Yeah, you have to have that bubble. You know, the bubble. You gotta put the bubble in your voice.
What's the bubble? I don't know.
It's sort of like that. It's kind of like
I don't understand anything you're saying.
It's like Harry Carey from Chicago, only worse.
I don't get it. I don't know. But Bubble, where did they get the name Bubble from?
I don't know. You never did Top 40 radio either, did you?
I did not.
Yeah. Well, you know, the format now is like
the closest thing I did to Top 40 radio, which you hated. Well, I shouldn't say you hated it. You liked it so much that you took it with you to FNX in Boston and tortured your jocks with
what, your blitz breaks? Oh, they're legendary. Yes.
The blitz break, was the most top 40 thing I ever did. And I don't even remember how I did it because it was 400 years ago.
The concept was, and because, look, AOR jocks really don't know how to do this, or they didn't, I should say. Maybe they do now, but the idea was a rolling break. But you understood the concept of a rolling break in its most elemental form, which is two songs are going to start playing back to back and you're just going to talk over it briefly. You're going to hit and go. And that's what I couldn't get jocks to understand, was how to hit and go. You know, just
what was
the blitz break.
Who were the victims? By the way, we have an email address. I should point this out right now. Yeah. It is thatoddcast, thatoddcast, thatoddcast@gmail.com. I decided to go with the Google as opposed to the AOL because the Google apparently is much cooler now. So it's that oddcast. If you want to email us, if you're a victim, we'll give you a shout out. We're going to give some shout outs on the program.
Could you, for those of us who don't know what that means, could you spell out, could you actually say the letters and everything? That oddcast.
That, I just spelled it.
T-H-A-T.
I just spelled it. It looks like the Todd, the T-H-A, the Toddcast. T-H-A-T. Oddcast. I already spelled it once. I don't know what the fuck you're thinking.
Hang on.
Let me do it again.
In radio. What is radio? Reach and frequency.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to pause your machine and whatever you're listening to, your cassette, your reel to reel.
You could do it too.
And then what I want you to do is grab a writing utensil, preferably a B2 pencil and a yellow pad of paper, and pause right now, and I'm going to give you the address right now. It's That Oddcast, thatoddcast, @gmail, which is spelled gmail.com.
Now, what are you going to do when more than three people actually send us
Nobody
emails?
Nobody is
going to. You're going to. I know.
I'm gonna believe
anybody's going to listen to this.
I don't think anybody's going to listen to this, especially Keith
Dakin. You might
Dakin.
Be right.
Keith Dakin's not going to listen.
No, they're going to listen.
Who are the people that you tortured with my blitz breaks?
Every jock on WFNX.
I need to know the names because I want one of these fuckers.
Neil Robert.
Who's Neil Robert?
Joanne Duty.
Wait, Neil Robert, real name?
Yes.
Real no, come name. On. What's his real name?
No, his real name's Neil Robert.
Guys with two first names aren't—they're not real.
I
names.
Know it's weird, right? But his real name is Neil.
See, Robert. You know Kevin Weatherly's real name is Kevin Weatherly.
Yeah.
Right. Everybody yeah. else is suspect. Alex Cosper probably his real name, because Cosper is not a first name. The guys like Jod Paul, everybody, all those people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or our buddy Garrett Michaels had to have that name because he had an ethnic-sounding last name.
No, he did not. What kind of... He's the he whitest guy I know. What kind of ethnic? Eastern
Polish.
European? Polish. All right. Well, there
Polish.
You go.
See, that's the whole thing.
It's like Jim McGuinn. His real name is Jim Slusarsik.
It is?
Yes.
That's a great name. Yes. So hard to spell in an email, though. Slusarsik.
Slusarsik.
Okay, so...
say prosthesis.
What was the first guy? Neil Robert?
Neil Robert.
Neil Robert.
Yeah.
It's definitely his real name. So when I get an yes. email this week saying, yes, Tolkoff tortured me with your Blitzbreak tape 14 years in a row until I finally got it wrong. Who else? Kurt St. Jesus?
Yeah, Kurt St. Thomas.
Kurt St. Jesus. Is that his real name?
Troy Smith.
Kurt St. Thomas. Real name?
No.
Okay. Real name is probably like Herbie McMillan.
Druckenmiller.
Of course you're going to change your name.
Druckenmiller.
Yeah, Druckenmiller, probably the greatest on-air name of all time. What's up, everybody? It's Druckenmiller.
Now,
or just Druckenmiller.
I don't know. Anybody who follows finance would maybe recognize that name.
Yes, I'm sure they would. But we're not going to talk about that now.
All right.
Who else got tortured?
I don't know. Everybody was there.
Joanne
was
Worley? Who?
Joanne Duty.
Joanne Duty. Real name?
Real name.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah.
She must have been stoked when Dookie came out. I'm serious. Somebody's finally recognizing my duty. Okay, so
yeah.
Joanne Duty.
Right.
So who am I going to get the email from to tell me
know.
About the torture?
You gotta find. Well, who are you
so
going to contact?
Did you play it for Dakin? Did you ever play it for Dakin?
I might have. I don't know.
What about Big Ed?
I had it. Wait, I had it during the first time I was there until 93. But when I went back in 05,
somebody 04, destroyed it.
Yeah, I think I lost it. It's too bad. Can you do another one for me? Can you do another Blitzbreak?
I didn't even know it was on the first one. Can you paraphrase it?
Listen.
And I'll do it right now.
All right. So here, I've made a decision. Here's what we're going to do. One of the things we'll do with this is when it comes to bands and musicians, you do all those interviews because I suck at it. And you're much better. And then I'll do everybody that has to do with radio, programming, everything else. That you're awful
how many,
at.
How many people are coming in to be our guests at this point?
I don't know. None at the moment. I'm just saying
okay, so
that
if
the division of responsibility is this. I don't want to talk to these artists. I have nothing to say.
I have an
you
idea.
You like to talk to them. I never like to go backstage and meet anybody.
I have an idea for you. What? I've asked a friend of mine to come in eventually. I don't know if he's going to come in the next two programs or three programs. Whatever. And he grew up here in San Diego, and he grew up listening to what 91X did back in the day. In fact, his band has covered U2 songs. And on one
See,
of their
there
albums.
There we go. Look how much knowledge.
So no,
you
but what I'm saying is that I would like to ask him questions about growing up in San Diego, being a musician, becoming a musician that sold like 15 million albums. Hold on.
Oh come.
Let me fucking finish. You fucking piece of shit. Let me seriously. I want you to ask him questions about radio and what he knows because I want to know what musicians.
You could do that
think.
Too. By the way,
no,
you can talk to musicians and radio. I can only talk to radio.
I didn't interrupt you for the first 12 minutes of this program.
I let you run. Rampant last week. I let you do 30 minutes nonstop without saying anything.
All I'm asking is, I want you to ask him when he comes in, if he comes in, if indeed musicians ever think, I'm writing a song, will this get played on the radio? Because that would be really interesting to me. Because if I was in a band, I would be like, fuck it, I don't give a shit if this gets played on the radio. But if it does, it's a bonus, right?
Funny you should bring that up. I don't believe that. Let me ask you this question. So you're a musician, right? You learn to play your instrument, guitar,
right.
whatever it is. You write songs.
Right.
You don't want to do this in a vacuum to like you
no,
and two
of course
other people.
Not.
Doesn't
of course.
I'm of the belief that every band or every musician does not want to play in a closet. They want their music to be out there. They want to be recognized.
Yes. Yes.
So it's not like they're writing for specifically for radio.
Correct.
It would be nice if they had that in the back of their head.
I think that they're writing. It's kind of like a painter. The painter goes like, is this going to sell? They paint whatever they're going to paint.
Right.
The artist is going to do whatever it is. If it happens to connect with an audience, whether it's through live concerts, selling CDs, compact discs, discs that are compact, mini discs, cassette tapes, reel-to-reels,
vinyls, the vinyls,
all that stuff, or downloads.
Yeah.
Which I still do not understand the concept of MP3s. It just fucking drives me
insane. I'm sorry, wait a minute. Didn't you work at a company in San Diego called MP3?
But I don't understand the concept of why would you spend your life making a record sound perfect and then suddenly somebody grabs it and goes, I'm going to shrink it down to a mailable size and make it sound like shit. You can hear radio stations here in San Diego that are playing MP3 quality songs on the radio.
I know, it bugs the shit out of you, doesn't it?
It fucking does. It drives me insane.
Because you can tell the difference on the
air. I can completely tell the difference, and it just sounds like shit. It's like super bad produced. You know, they all sound like, the early Husker Du stuff that just had that, like, really compressed, over-the-top drum sounded like they were being played on Kleenex boxes, you know? It just didn't sound like there was, like, a thump behind it.
No, but you know what PDs used to do? The rule of thumb was... go listen to your station and go listen to music on the shittiest radio you can find.
Right. But that was for the compression and all that shit.
But it was also
bands don't write songs to get on the radio. If they get on the radio, I think it's a bonus. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to ask my buddy when he gets here, eventually when he gets here. And I'm going to ask other musicians too, because I should have a few.
Well, don't we know this by now? Haven't they all been asked these same questions?
No, we don't know this right now. No, because it just doesn't fucking happen that way.
You know why I don't want to talk to musicians anymore? Because I did for like 5 years with Modern Rock Live. They don't.
Yeah,
let me finish.
Quick side.
Hang on. Yes, you may side your thing. Let me just get this thought done.
Okay.
Here's why. Because they don't want to be there to talk to you. They don't want to do shows. They don't have anything to say. They don't want to talk. They let their music do the talking. British bands in particular, they don't get up on the mic. They're like back here. Hi. And they talking in my room. And I used to have to go get up on the mic, get right there, get up like you were telling me, like get up there, right there on the mic, because they don't know how to talk into microphones, and they don't want to answer any questions about, well, how did you get the title to that song or whatever it is. You are a better interviewer for musicians because you can talk to them about shit they care about. I think.
Right.
I could be wrong. But I feel that.
There's a reason that I do that, though. There's a reason that I talk to them about shit they want to talk about because they don't want to talk about
all the other shit that they've been asked about. Right. Yeah. Which I understand from their point, but here's the thing. The people you see on the late night chat shows. They come out there, they're supposed to talk about their movie, but they really don't want to.
Right.
But that's part of the
deal. Because they finished the movie a year and a half ago, and they're waiting to do this thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring up my buddy Garrett Michaels again, because Garrett, I saw him at the Swimmers show. Swimmers played this gig here in San Diego a couple, 3 days ago. So when you're hearing this, it could have been a year ago, depending on when you're listening to this. Swimmers have been one of my favorite bands for a long time. They played an X-Fest for us 4 or 5 years ago, I'm guessing. In the band is Billy Joe from Green Day's son. Joey plays drums, and his other son, Jacob, plays guitar now. They've added a guitar player, so it's no longer just a four-piece. It's a five-piece. So that being said, I went down to see – you know, how much they've improved over the last bunch of years. And the new album is fucking phenomenal. And I see Garrett there and, Greg and, like, virtually everybody that worked at 91X with me back in the day. And Swimmers came out, kicked some serious ass.
By the way, back in the day is, like, 3 years ago.
Well, yeah, two and a bit. But the point is that Swimmers kicked some serious ass. And I see Garrett. And Garrett and I used to have this discussion when we were both at 94.9 about when an artist comes into the studio – it wasn't so much these pat questions about, so how's the tour going? So tell me about Phoenix. Like, did you guys get hot? It's like, because that's bullshit. So what he said at one point was, it was a conversation between me and some zany musician about things that you felt like you were in the room listening to a musician talk about things they wanted to talk about. Because interviews are very difficult. You can't get shit out of people if they don't want to talk about it. And it's very rare that people talk. One of my favorite interviews of all time, and I want to bring up your Modern Rock Live history, is when PJ Harvey came in to do an interview when she was playing in San Diego for a show. She comes in, and I was told specifically, nothing personal. Don't talk about anything personal. Keep it all about the album, blah, blah, blah. Great. I ask her one question. She goes automatically for the personal stuff and just kept going for 25 minutes. And at the end of it, it was like, wow. No wonder they don't say, don't think that's pretty, because she's going to talk about it anyway. And the other one was one of my favorite interviews, Brian Wilson, because not only is he a fucking legend, but the guy has gone through all these kind of trials and tribulations that we've all witnessed and documented. So when he comes to do an interview, he brings with him a guy who will correct him if he misremembers something because of whatever brain farts he's got. And I sat there with him and we chatted for, it was supposed to be a 20, 25 minute interview. We chatted for 45 minutes and his handler corrected him two or three times. But my favorite part was Gene, who's been working with him for 15, 20 years. You know, Gene Seavers, right?
Yes.
Todd Seavers' wife.
Yes, yes. She does PR.
At the end of the interview, Brian takes off, his handlers take off, and Gene says to me, I learned more shit about Brian Wilson in the last 45 minutes of stuff he's never told me before. Because I don't know what it is. I'm trying to find the one little latch that opens up, and then all of a sudden their childhood spills out. Right. Robert Plant, the same thing. If you hit something with them where you, and I've always said, if you turn the rock star back into the 13-year-old, because that's when they, before they, you know, played at Madison Square Garden, before they were known as Brian Wilson or Robert Plant or Robert Smith or whatever it is, they were a kid listening to somebody else's records who were like going, fuck, I love, you know, Tim Buckley or I love The Cure or I love whatever it is.
Right.
And you got to turn them into that person again.
And you also have to, it's sort of like a spur of the moment call because you're sitting across to them. There's no rapport yet and you're trying to find the thing that's going to open them up. You don't know what that is. You never know what that is.
You never know what it is.
It happens.
Unless you do a little bit of research to figure out what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that.
One of the things that – because I filled in for you once. Actually, I filled in for Calderon once on Modern Rock Live. Did you replace him?
Yes.
Okay. So this is before I think you did it. I got a phone call from Tip.
Who?
Steve Tip.
Who is that?
Steve Tip is – everybody knows. Fucking Gary Michaels
knows. Everybody knows.
There's
going to be people that listen to this that don't know who Steve Tip is.
Steven Tip.
He does real estate now.
Okay. He's a fucking real estate magnate. Anyway, Steve Tip, who formerly worked at
– Reprise.
Reprise, Columbia, a bunch of different – he's the guy who turned us on to Toad the Wet Sprocket way back in the day. And
he's the one who turned us on to Madonna at 91X.
Yes.
He used to come down. He was the club guy. He was the club music guy for doing promotions for Reprise.
So Tip, I believe he grew up in Los Angeles. He's got a bunch of kids.
All right. That's
too many kids.
Enough of that.
So, okay. The Tip calls up and goes, can you fly to Houston to do an interview with Green Day? Either Calderon couldn't make it, or I don't remember what the problem was, but it was basically Calderon couldn't do it. So Green Day apparently wanted me to do the interview with them, which is funny because every time I've done interviews with them before, they go fucking insane because they are an insane bunch of people. So I fly to Houston to do this interview, and it got out of control super fast because it's fucking Green Day, one, and because they're taking phone calls, two, mm-hmm. which basically you can't control the phone call because you can screen them, right?
Yeah.
People go, like, what's the question you have for Green Day? Oh, I want to know about the new album. And they go, do you guys fuck dogs? And the next thing you know, it's like, no, we don't fuck dogs. We fuck chimpanzees or something like that. So you know, to your point, you don't know what it is that's going to turn them into whatever it is, but on a show like Modern Rock Live is not the format to do that.
Well, it could be. It just wasn't set up that way. It's basically a chat show to play music and to take calls from listeners. It's a live interview show,
right?
And yeah, they would only get so wacky. That's a whole deeper thing.
Let me just say this. So how did you get into that? How did you who called you first back in?
Well, here's what happened.
1812s.
I'll tell you what happened. Before I started doing the show for Tom, because he went to MTV, couldn't do the show anymore. So, but before that, I had one of those things. Tom couldn't come out to California and go up to, or the West Coast, couldn't go up to Seattle to do Soundgarden. So Jack Isquith, who's the head of alternative promotion at A&M Records.
Oh, is that how you pronounce that? A&M?
A&M?
Yeah.
Another meeting.
A&M.
Sorry, go ahead. So they call me and go, listen, can you do this Soundgarden interview for Tom? He can't come out here. We're going to fly you up to Seattle, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem. Before I get up there, and I'm flying to Seattle with Jack Isquith from A&M right next to me, they're all very concerned that I'm going to be able to pull this off. And all the way up there, Jack kept saying to me, listen, we don't call them Frown Garden for nothing. These guys don't really have a sense of humor. They're very serious. Don't try to joke around with Chris Cornell. It's sort of like, you know, keep it on the straight and narrow. Don't go out of the box.
One second. They actually had A&M nicknamed them Frown Garden?
Yes. That was their internal nickname at A&M, Frown Garden.
I must point out and laugh, they are some of the most intellectual, funny guys on the planet.
Well, that's the thing. So we get up there. We go to the studio, which is right off the public market. It's this tiny little thing, and it's me and Chris and the big Sasquatch-looking guy. What's his name?
I forget. Kim?
Maybe.
Guitar player?
Yes. Kim.
Thayil.
Yes. So it's those two guys and me.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to like, all right, I'm going to keep, I'm not going to joke around. We won't do any weird jokes here. Something happens, though. It's amusing. And then the next thing you know, it's one of those things. All of a sudden, it's like, let's have fun. Good time, guys. And they're joking around. And it's anything but serious. And I, at the same time, I think Jack Isquith is behind the glass in there. I'm just shooting daggers at him. Because he's giving me all this bad advice. Like, don't do anything that's going to upset them. Because they're always serious. And it was completely the opposite. We all went and had beers afterwards. It was, we all got along. It was fantastic.
That's a great story. Do you remember what set him off? What turned him into the happy-go-lucky
people?
No, I
don't remember. I was just, you know, I was just trying to be conversational and not hit him with, like, all these stupid questions that they've been asked a thousand times before.
Jack texted me earlier. He knew this was going to come up. And he said he was injecting laughing gas into the studio at the same time on the air conditioning system just to make it work that way. That's really funny because I did not know they had a nickname, Frown Garden, because they'd been, you know, part of the format since before any of the other grunge bands. And I hate using that expression.
Go ahead.
No, and I hate using that compression.
You hate using the term grunge?
Grunge because
it's like saying I don't want to use punk, but you have to.
Yes, you do, but
that's
at the same time,
or just call them
time,
punk.
But this, at the same time, though, when you listen to all the different bands that came out of that Seattle thing, I think the term grunge was more applied to the fashion, which was
grungy.
Yeah,
but, or was it the sound that was crunchy and kind of grungy?
No, because the sound was just to me. It was. I remember the first time somebody played me something. I'm like, oh, it's like the 70s sludgy type of like, but grungy. Right. Grungy was the fact that when everybody toured back in the day, Mike Watts started it. Flannels was Mike Watts' thing because when you get in the van and the Minutemen would go off, flannels are the easiest thing to tour the Midwest and the northern states in the wintertime because it was the extra layer, right? You'd have T-shirt. You have either your underoos on. What are they called, those things?
Thermals,
and yeah. Then your jeans over the top, and mm-hmm. then a T-shirt, and then you'd have a flannel, and then you'd have a jacket. Because a lot of people didn't want to wear winter jackets because they looked poofy back in those days. Those stupid, you know, whatever it was. So you went through this process of you walk into somebody's house, the jacket would come off, then the flannel would come off. And the whole grungy thing was the fashion side
of it.
You're
just making this up.
I'm not making
You're
this up.
Making
it's
this
fucking,
a fantastical
you lived,
story. It's
you
like,
lived in Quag. Which is probably a pretty moderate climate. Did you ever have snowdrifts that were like 45 feet in the air like we
yes.
had in Detroit? Fuck, you did not.
Yes, we did. Quag is just outside of New York. There were winters when, let me tell you.
And what did you wear in those winters? Underalls?
Underoos. There were times when you could ice skate from Quag to West Hampton Beach on the bay. It was so frozen over.
Okay, what did you wear? That's my question.
Thick, warm clothing.
And did you wear flannels?
I don't know. I don't think we had flannels.
Yes, because you were all at fucking Long Island. You were wearing, you were probably wearing fucking Munsing wear or something fucking ridiculous like that.
Munsing
so,
wear?
So
wrong with
what's
you.
What's the tennis winter equivalent of?
There is no tennis winter equivalent. You play tennis in a dome in the winter, in an inflatable tent, and you still wore your shorts.
But who was the big fashion icon for the tennis wearing crowd? I don't know because I never
Fred
wore that.
Fred Perry. And for you see today people wearing Fred Perry shirts, Fred Perry sneakers.
Yeah, no. That was because he's an English guy.
Yeah, so.
But I don't know why the fucking people from Quag and Long Island would be wearing things like that.
It would be like me making fun of you for being from Detroit.
So,
where in Detroit are you from exactly? Where did you live?
I lived all over Detroit. But
where?
I was born in Milwaukee. Okay, you know that? The industrial town of Milwaukee that brings fucking beer to everybody in America.
And Harley-Davidson's.
And I'd like to point out sausages.
Yes.
Sausages.
Okay, so what part of Detroit
I grew up did you live 14 in Losser.
What is that? What kind of neighborhood is that?
It is a very well-to-do neighborhood. Mm-hmm. It is a very well-to-do neighborhood. My neighbors were guys who ran U.S. Steel. I told you, didn't I tell you the story about Buzz Klotz? Lee Iacocca? Did I tell you the story about Lee Iacocca?
Why, was he your neighbor?
I think I was telling Alex a story.
Did he give you a crisis?
I was telling Alex on his show, Lee Iacocca.
Alex doesn't want to hear. Alex, do you want to hear this? No, you don't want to hear this. I'm already bored. He's talking about Lee Iacocca. I want to talk about radio.
Since you guys love the 60s, man, Ford introduced the freaking 8-track tape player in the 66 Ford Mustang.
Okay, listen.
How cars connect with radio. That's where most there radio listening
that's
is done.
That's fucking Ford fucked it up. Put an 8-track in the car so you couldn't listen to the FM anymore. All right, swing that door shut again. We don't need Alex coming back in here again. Swing it shut.
Seriously. I don't understand.
I'm gonna explain something
to you.
Hang
on. You got to explain something to me.
Things you don't understand about how fucking life works. Ready?
Wow, that's cool.
Thanks.
Here's what I don't understand. How does streaming in cars work? Like, you got to trail this cable out the trunk.
I know. It's a fucking pain in the ass. Okay, ready? I'll give you the quick story.
No, I don't want to hear the story. No, please
I'm going to tell you because you're going to fucking fall in love with it.
With what? With what?
How revolutionary it was growing up in the neighborhood that I grew up in.
Can you keep it to 10 seconds or less?
Yes.
We're almost out of time this half hour.
Lee Iacocca. He was the youngest kind of big executive at Ford Motor Company. Don't fucking snort into the goddamn microphone. I'll kick you.
I knew this was a bad idea.
So Lee lived in Bloomfield Hills, very hoity-toity part of the suburbs. I mean, super hoity-toity.
Mm-hmm.
His kids, who were our age, my age, one older, one slightly younger, needed a place to play on Saturdays when he went down to the office at Ford. He would come to our front door. Knock on the door because my dad knew him because of business. He'd knock on the door like this. I'd answer the door. Mr. Iacocca. Kathy and Leah, his two kids, would be sitting there. And I would take them in the house and then escort them to the neighbors once the neighbors woke up. Because they would arrive at like crack of dawn. You know, we'd all eat cereal, eat our Captain Crunch or whatever the fuck it was. And then I'd distribute them through the neighborhood. And what would happen was he'd come back at like 4 or 5 in the afternoon. And retrieve his kids, and away they go. So we used to get invited up to his fucking mansion every once in a while for these parties, birthday parties and stuff. I witnessed the year they released the Mustang, 64 and a half. Kathy, for her birthday, got a scale model that she could actually drive around her fucking property.
Kathy who?
Kathy Iacocca, his daughter, right? So there's Kathy and Leah. Leah, obviously named after Lee Iacocca. And Kathy, at one point, my parents go, you should marry her. And I'm like, I'm not even thinking about marriage. I'm like, 6. Or 5 or whatever the fuck it was. I think I want to get married yet. But anyway, the point was is that Ford and all these people in this neighborhood revolutionized how all this stuff was done. Vietnam War was still going on. As he just said, 8-tracks got introduced into cars. Radio was the most important thing in your car because it was your communication device. This is pre-car phones. I remember some of the first car phones back in the day. But the point of this whole thing that I'm trying to bring
is there a point?
I grew up in a neighborhood that brought you America and radio, not fucking Quag and tennis. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay,
fuck you and tennis.
Let me say something about Quag.
What did Quag ever do?
All right, I'll tell you. Here's a quick little tiny story because I don't know any of the famous people you know. But when I was in high school, at the tender age of 17, I was selected to go handle a video recorder and tape, Julie Nixon voting in West Hampton because she was married to somebody from the Cox family. And so they said, hey, you want to go film her? You want to go tape her voting this morning or tomorrow morning?
I thought that was illegal.
And I said, yeah, that'd be great. No. So what happened was in high school, the Secret Service came in. I had to go to the principal's office and be interviewed by the Secret Service at the age of 17. To figure out that, you know, I'm not a maniac. And they gave me a little pin, a little lapel pin that said, you're cleared for this sort of thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like it in my face, but I'm actually duly impressed that, first of all, you would actually pass that test.
Exactly.
Because I know what a fucking weirdo you are.
17.
Two, the fact that you could operate, because it was one of those big over-the-shoulder things.
Yeah. No. Not even. We're talking 1972.
No, but I'm talking, it had a big pack that was on your back.
Something.
And then the camera was.
Yeah, I had a whole rig.
Right. You had a whole rig, and you wore headphones.
And on my, not at that time. On my way to do the thing, I ran over a dog in my neighborhood that morning.
Did you videotape that part?
No.
That could be huge on YouTube.
It was sad. I was going down the street. This dog would always chase cars and ran right in front of my Jeep. and I ran it over. Thump, thump. And then I had to go, and the house was right there.
It was a
there.
CJ? You had a CJ?
I had a 53 Willys, yeah.
A 50, you had a 53 Willys?
I had a 53 Willys Jeep. It was my first car.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Four-speed? Three-speed?
Four-speed.
Four-speed. And reverse.
And reverse.
Locking hubs? You had to get out and
yeah, you had to go lock the hubs. Yep. Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
I know.
Lee Iacocca, by the way, brought that back. I just like to point that out.
Of course.
He brought it back. He brought the Jeep back. It was dead. Dead in the water. And unfortunately, did the K-car, too. My point is that growing up in the crazy area known as Detroit, which you were giving shit to.
I'm not giving shit to
live,
Detroit.
I did live downtown for a while as well.
Yeah.
At one point. I also had bizarre roommates.
I'm still waiting
roommates.
For you to get me a Shinola watch, which is something I
don't know anybody
would...
at Shinola. I might
well,
know
I think
people
you
at
should.
Shinola. I might. They might know me, but I don't know them.
All right. Can we get back on track, which I don't even know what that is. What
we're talking about. I want to talk about Modern Rock Live. Who after
Why?
You did the Soundgarden thing, because this is one of the most important things you hate
interviewing. I will say this. There are stations.
Can I finish my fucking thought?
Why?
You interviewed Soundgarden, and you say you hate interviewing people.
I do.
And so in this program, when rock stars come in, I'm going to talk to them.
Yes.
My point is that you were the host of Modern Rock Live for how long?
Almost 5 years.
Almost 5 years. Yes. You replaced Tom Calderone?
Yes.
Did he start the show?
Yes.
How did he start the show? When did he start the show?
He started the show a few years before that himself with another guy who went out and did sales for the show. But it was his concept. And then they sold the show to...
Premier.
Somebody else to do that was before Premiere. They went somewhere that they could do like a whole sales thing and support the show.
Right.
So he figured out.
And
pretty
it came
early
out
on.
Of LIR at that time.
I don't know where it came out of. It might have DRE at the time. It's possible.
LIR DRE.
What?
New York.
Oh, it was in New York. Yeah.
Okay, so it came out of New York, and the artist would have to swing by there and do things.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
Do you remember your favorite? Besides Soundgarden, your favorite interview?
Favorite interview might have been Courtney Love because it was completely whacked.
Yes.
With Drew Barrymore, who was friends with her at the time, calling in.
Yes.
It was pretty funny. Or maybe it was the other way around. We were doing Drew Barrymore because she was in a horror movie done by that famous director. And then I think it was Courtney Love that called in.
Okay.
That was crazy.
Either one. Doesn't matter if you can remember which one it was.
It was a great interview. How
much weed do you smoke on a weekly basis?
Nowadays, I'm not going to talk about that.
Okay. So is it the memory problem about not remembering if it was Julie Newmark or Julie Newmar or Julie Nixon versus Courtney Love or Drew Barrymore? Okay. So Courtney Love is one of your favorites, even though you're not sure if she was in the studio. Who else? Who were your other favorites?
Wow. There were a lot of bands over 5 years. R.E.M. was great. We did a live from Electric Lady Studios in New York. That was good. And then I think it was Mike Mills or somebody forgot like how one of the songs started. They had to start over.
Oh, they were playing live on the air at the
same
time.
Yeah,
they were
playing live.
That's fucking amazing. Are these archived anywhere?
Yeah, they are somewhere. And then another good one was Beck. At Capitol Studios.
Yes.
In the studio where Frank Sinatra did all his recordings.
Yeah.
That was in front of like a sort of we had like 100 people in there. It was a live audience. And we were set up and it was back.
And he was playing too?
Yeah. He was playing.
I love
also.
That studio. It's in the hollers underneath Capitol.
Yeah.
Built by Frank Sinatra, right?
Yes.
For him and his orchestra.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing. The place is amazing. It really is.
I did an interview with Coldplay down
but
there.
But here's the thing.
And
all of these interviews, I liked them. I enjoyed them. I don't think I did a good job with it, though.
Why not?
Because
you weren't prepared?
Because the show, no, I was super prepared. Every single artist. But you're right. The show's format was very restrictive.
Right.
It didn't allow for a lot of like just rambling on. It was like... Intro, talk about the band, give the background, they say hi, they play, or
and
we're
Kevin
playing something.
And Kevin from Dayton, Ohio is calling in on
exactly.
WQBlog.
Yeah.
Hi, Beck. Do you have any idea of what Loser's about?
And then Beck would chime in with, no. And then, okay, we got Kevin from Poughkeepsie, because it's always Kevin who calls in.
And you know, I don't think we ever had Radiohead. But I will say this, after 5 years and all the bands that we did, one a week, sometimes two a week, so we're talking hundreds of artists, inevitably...
How did you do two a week?
Because it was a split up. It was a 90-minute show, so it was like 45. Split up.
I didn't realize you did 45. That sometimes. Yeah. I never ran the show.
I know.
Sorry.
That's all right. Listen, a couple of things about the show. One, you could always tell who really promoted the show and cared about it. HFS did. Philadelphia did. But there are other places that, like I got a call from, it might have been Jim Richards or somebody who's in Chicago. And it was on Q101 there. But they played it after midnight, and they didn't promote it. So a couple of years after I'm into it, he calls me up and he goes, we're taking Modern Rock Live off. It's just not doing anything for us. But then again, we didn't really promote it. Whereas at HFS and in Philly, they were like bonkers. So the phone calls always came from those markets that
we're
had live. A good run for the show.
Yeah, we're live.
Yeah,
We're going to wrap this show up with the caveat that we're going to come back
and continue this. No, no, we're not.
This half hour
is
up.
No, this is done.
You don't want to talk about Modern Rock Live anymore?
No,
I have more questions.
Yeah, next week we'll talk about something else.
Seriously?
Yes.
Because next week is going to start in 10 seconds because we're going to basically...
Shh, don't say that.
Look, nobody knows that we're going to tape two in a row. Nobody knows
no,
that.
No, we're not.
Okay, we're going to go off on vacation for a week. We'll be back.
We'll see you next week.
I'm going to Costa Rica to hang out in the Maldives with R-Dub.
Hey, thanks for stopping in today.
I want to know if R-Dub... Okay, once again, if you would like
Who's
to...
R-Dub?
It doesn't matter who he is. We're just dropping names. We're just dropping names. Garrett Michaels.
You gotta explain who some of these people are.
I'm gonna drop Jim Richards again. Where's Jim? And I'm gonna.
All right, we're done.
Check. Hold on. They at Oddcast. We got an email in. Welcome to your Gmail account. Okay. Not an email in yet. Anyway, if anybody wants to email us, fucking get on it right now, kids. thatoddcast@gmail.com. Max Tolkoff.
What?
You're an asshole.
You are an asshole.
Slam the door.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.